Welcome to Laugh Tracks and the Generation Exploitation Podcast. Today's episode, records devoted to the Cold War.
Hey, maybe somebody could help me out with another picture I've seen in the papers. President Johnson was pinning his big medal on a Marine for shooting a whole batch of Asians. I don't understand that. I remember that other Marine down at college in Austin done whole lots of good shooting from the tower. Remember that? Didn't get no medal.
Look up yonder in the sky now. What is that I pray? It's a bird, it's a plane, it's a man insane. It's my president, LBJ. He's flying high, way up in the sky, just like Superman. But I have got a little piece of kryptonite. Yes, I'll bring it back to land. Said, come out, Lyndon, with your hands held high. Drop your guns, baby, and reach for the sky. I've got you surrounded and you ain't got a chance. We'll send you back to Texas, make you work on your ranch. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Super dog, but it sure won't do him no good. Yeah, I found out why from a Russian spy that he ain't nothing but a comic book. Gonna pull him off the stand, clean up the land, yes, we'll have us a brand new day. What is more, I got the Fantastic Four and Doctor Strange to help him on his way. Said, come out, Lyndon, with your hands held high. Drop your guns, baby, and reach for the sky. Got you surrounded and you ain't got a chance. Send you back to Texas, make you work on your ranch. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, gonna make a meat flour.
300,000 Americans marched to shore to save the freedom of Vietnam. The war has raged there without us for many years before, but now we must go in, says Uncle Sam. We'll see that our brave soldier nothing lacks, except we'll tie one hand behind his back. Like in Korea, don't cross over that Yalu, they said. It was the French who massed their armies first, outbanning rebels in soldiers and guns. Relieving tanks and guns, tremendous force would send guerrillas on the run. It took them 8 long years of such ignorant bliss, for they finally said, to heck with this. And they got out, lock, stock, and barrel. In South Vietnam, they have their own defense comprised of over 500,000 troops. Equipped with every weapon the U.S. dare send, including thousands of advisors to boot. Now when a force that strong can't whip a few Viet Cong, then you know darn well there's something basically wrong. Now will the real enemy please stand? Come on, North Vietnam, on your feet. Now let's assume for a minute that the U.S. could destroy those sources that are furnishing the goods, the guns and bullets upon which the war depends and without which it would quickly end. Now would it make good sense if a nation were that able to keep wishing for and harping on the conscience table? Where the commies get their half, then move the battle line just on down the street.
Do you fear he'll never return from that strange land far away?
The simple moral of this story is that war's a dreadful, dangerous thing, and that a nation either ought to stay on out or have the guts to fight to win, and that by now we ought to know whether we have or not, and that we either ought to get going or get off the pot. In other words, war is no business for doves, and brother, have we got 'em.
with us, as you know, the former vice president of the United States during the Eisenhower administration. There's a rumor going around you'll probably maybe see a little more of him on television as election time draws near. We'll discuss that possibility with him. This is his first visit. Would you welcome, please, the Honorable Richard Milhouse Nixon. Dick. I welcome you, Dick. It's nice to have you. If I may call you Dick.
Well, I've been called almost everything.
I imagine that comes with the territory, doesn't it?
I'd like to add something, though. I don't see your show very often. Sometimes I'm working at that time of the evening, but I caught it last night, and I was immensely impressed, and I think you ought to run for president. Now, let me tell you a few things. I'm an expert on how to run for president. Not how to win, but how to run.
Yes, you are that.
I do a few things to you.
Mm-hmm.
First, let me tell you your assets. You're young, 42, right?
Right.
You come over on television like gangbusters. And boy, I'm the expert on how important that is.
You're not going to lend me your makeup man, are you?
No, I'm going to lend him to Lyndon Johnson. You'd have to do a few things, however. You'd have to let your hair grow.
A little longer?
Yeah, tease it a little in front across the forehead. But all in all, I think you'd make quite a candidate, great candidate. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what I'll do, and I won't do this with any of the other potential candidates for president.
Mm-hmm.
If you run for president, I'll run for vice president. And what a ticket, a dream ticket that'd make. A real nightmare.
Yes. It's my deal.
What do you think?
That is the...
Johnny for president.
Now, this reaction tonight, may I ask you very candidly and very honestly for openers, with that kind of a reaction from an audience who obviously meant that when you walked out, are you going to run as a Republican presidential candidate for next year?
Well, Johnny, that question was not unexpected.
No, I imagine not.
I thought I'd save the answer for the Joey Bishop Show. I've been reading the ratings. He needs it.
That's Richard Nixon appearing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, as featured on the Magic Moments from The Tonight Show double LP that Casablanca Records put out in the mid-70s. And the interview, I think, was conducted around early 1965 or maybe late 1964 somewhere. Nothing worse than a politician trying to hip themselves up going on a late-night talk show. We've seen John Ashcroft try and do it on The Daily Show, George W. Bush on Letterman, Arnold Schwarzenegger on a regular basis on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and so on and so forth. Rarely is it not painful. Before that, we heard a really hilarious LP, unintentionally so, by a guy named John C. Croft with Al's Dynamics, a classic weird record I can get very little information about. This is what we call a vanity pressing. Very lo-fi, done in a small studio, maybe somebody's house. This one filled with ridiculous reactionary politics and groovy music. The song we heard was called Get Off the Pot, which contained lyrics criticizing America for not fighting hard enough in Vietnam. Might sound totally ludicrous today, and of course it is, but we hear the same argument now in regards to Iraq, and such a concept is actually proposed in all seriousness. Scary stuff. The LP is titled A Fallen Star, and also features some tracks I've played on the Generation Exploitation podcast before, including The Great Red Rat, which is about communists taking over America, and Song of Watts, a none-too-subtly racist track about the Los Angeles Watts riots. Before that, we started the show off with a bang. We listened to a song called Super Bird about LBJ, and the title is in reference to his wife, Lady Bird Johnson, who were both Democrats and ultimately responsible for the escalation of the Vietnam War, or the War on Vietnam. That song was by Country Joe and the Fish on Vanguard Records. The name of the LP is Electric Music for the Mind and Body, and it has a very excellent psychedelic cover. And the voice that we heard starting off the show today was of a man named Dick Davey, a great underrated stand-up comedian from the late 1960s who put out a pair of LPs on Columbia Records. And remarkably, Dick Davey, you would think he would be more famous. He was the very first white person to ever perform at the Apollo Theater in Harlem in the late 1960s, and he had a very progressive political point of view and was very funny as well. And actually, we're going to listen to some more from Dick Davey right now. First, here's a song by The Fugs, Kill for Peace.
Police is kind of mean here. Oh, one of them yelled at me yesterday, stop. I was just standing still. But I stopped anyway, so. Yeah, that's right. I take no chances. Can't take no chances with these police here. That warning shot gonna kill you every time, man. Yeah.
That's why. But up here in Canada, it's plain to see we're safe in the hands of the RCMP. The RCMP, the RCMP. We're safe in the hands of the RCMP. When Igor Gazenko deserted, you know, the horsemen put on a magnificent show. They provided a house and an auto for free for their generous lads in the RCMP. The RCMP, the RCMP, they're generous lads in the RCMP. When the Soviet ambassador got too involved, the Mounties rode in and the problem was solved. He was asked to get out with no publicity, for they're very discreet in the RCMP. The RCMP, the RCMP, they're very discreet in the RCMP. They are
arrested a Mountie in Toronto one day while reading an NDP pamphlet, they say. He was taken right out and strung up from a tree, for they weed out the Reds from the RCMP.
The RCMP, the RCMP, they weed out the Reds from the RCMP.
A professor encouraged his students one day. Very good marks, he did foolishly say. He was burned at the stake for the public to see. For there's only one mark to the RCMP.
The RCMP, the RCMP.
There's only one mark to the RCMP.
When the Navy's new battleship started to sink, they blackballed a seaman whose uncle was pink. It later turned out he was just NDP, but they don't make mistakes in the RCMP.
The RCMP, the RCMP, they don't make mistakes in the RCMP.
So over our hills and our valleys they roam, seeking out communists right here at home. A Saskatchewan spinster who was teaching grade 3 was flung into jail by the RCMP.
The RCMP, the RCMP, was flung into jail by the RCMP.
The dear old commissioner knows what to do. He's changing their outfits from scarlet to blue. Though they wore their red tunics as long as can be, it's hardly the shade for the RCMP.
The RCMP, the RCMP, it's hardly the shade for the RCMP.
I wasn't thinking about what is proper and what is not proper. There was something that I had on my mind. I was speaking for the people whom I am involved with, not only in Watts, but across the country. And when it comes to speaking my mind, protocol becomes secondary. As long as I did not use language that was offensive to anyone, I saw no fault in the way I handled myself.
Aircraft grenades, the sound of riot at the height of the trouble here in Paris. A typical night during the past fortnight, one of the many nights that built into the worst crisis situation here in a decade. It started with a tense but eerie calm, but now the action is starting. The militant students have appeared dressed in helmets, tear gas goggles, some waving the black flag of anarchy. They're throwing rocks, homemade Molotov cocktails, bottles full of gasoline down here among the police. The black-clad riot police, the CRS, dressed in helmets, goggles, shiny black plastic coats, which are too slippery for a rioter to hang on to. Each of those explosions a tear gas shell. And suddenly in front of the barricade, fires have started. They've overturned a car and set it alight. The police are moving up and they're sending up first a great water cannon with the hoses spraying water at the fires and at the students. And I'm getting back out of this into one of the side streets.
For the upper class, whites and blacks.
That's right.
It's a democracy for the privileged.
Uncle Tom,
it's
Uncle Tom.
It's a democracy for the Uncle Toms and the Aunt Jemima.
Talk to you.
The
French disorders of the Poor People's Campaign have erupted at the United States Supreme Court building, where windows have been smashed, allowing several persons to briefly enter the building.
They don't care much what's going on in the world in this town. I asked a fellow yesterday if he thought we beat the VA Com. He said, don't look good without Koufax and wheels. All them movie stars I seen on the sidewalk. You see them? You ever go over there? I try not to step on nobody. Finally, I had to step on Ronald Coleman, else I would have stepped on a crack. You know? Bad look. It's all these college kids across the street stepping all over Ronald Reagan. Oh, really stomping on here. Someone's even frugging on him. You know? I don't think Reagan care about that, though. He's so sure being president, he don't worry about no place on the sidewalk. He going over to Mount Rushmore for a fitting. You know that? That's where he going. I guess Reagan must have got tired of all them good guy parts.
If the French withdraw, Indochina would become communist-dominated within a month. The U.S., as leader of the free world, cannot afford further retreat in Asia. It is hoped that the U.S. will not have to send troops there, but if this government cannot avoid it, the administration must face up to the situation and dispatch forces. If to avoid communist expansion in Asia and Indochina, we must take the risk now by putting our boys in, I think the executive has to take the politically unpopular decision to do it. Vice President Nixon, April 16th, 1954. The country might indeed be gone. There are four dead Americans on the campus of Kent State University, gunned down by other Americans. Tear gas seeps through the air of a half dozen campuses. Mass rallies are building. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee wants to go right after the executive branch and take back its constitutional power. The fear among my friends is general about a possible military coup. From Indochina, we hear news, as we have for so long, from Peter Arnett of the Associated Press. The forces of what is laughingly referred to as the free world are moving into Cambodia, burning and shooting and destroying. Kids from Iowa are asked to distinguish between Cambodians and Vietnamese. Artillery is fired at moving human beings. The B-52s fly from our privileged sanctuaries in Thailand to churn up the earth. Here we come, Cambodia. Stick with us and let us give you freedom. At 17 rounds a second. And in Washington, Richard Nixon stands on the same corrupt language that he gave us 16 years ago. The president, we are cautioned, has facts that we don't have. One wonders, what are the facts? Have the Viet Cong finally built an airplane? Has Vincent Price built them a laser beam that will drill through the earth and destroy Palo Alto? Or did we discover that those gooks, dinks, and slopes were determined to fight on, and that they did not need Marx and Engels to provide them with reasons? It is typical of a man whose closest friend is a bonds lawyer that he has no real care for language. If you can get young Americans to think of people as dinks and slopes, you can persuade them to kill those dinks and slopes. When you call campus dissenters bums, as Nixon did the other day, you should not be surprised when they are shot through the head by National Guardsmen. Nixon is as responsible for the Kent State slaughter as he and the rest of his bloodless gang of corporation men were for the anti-integration violence in Lamar, and for the pillage and murder that is taking place in the name of democracy in Cambodia. There was always this doubt about Nixon. He seemed a neuter, a man of no strong ideas or feelings, who had tried to fill his emptiness with glib anti-communist rhetoric. His crusade against Alger Hiss always seemed to be not so much based on deep convictions as on the visibility it would give Nixon himself. He had come from obscurity, and Alger Hiss was a way to prove his own existence. Nixon lusted after power, and when he got it, there were still men who refused to give him proper respect. Some of them were Asian peasants. Others were students. Others were newspaper men, elected officials, and even members of his own party. Now he is striking out at all of them in the largest and grandest last press conference of them all. Long hairs, Senator Aiken, Senator Fulbright, editorial writers. You won't have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore, gentlemen, after he's through with this country. If those bums get out of hand on the campuses, then go along with Ronald Reagan. Only a couple of weeks ago, Reagan called for a bloodbath to solve campus disorder. Well, now he has it, committed at the hands of the draft dodgers and the guard. Nixon and Reagan, a fine pair, a fine madness. Perhaps it is now time to really find out why Nixon visited a doctor, a shrink, during the years he spent in New York recovering from the 1962 humiliation in California. Was it his manhood, as the rumors had it? His actions since the defeat of Harold Carswell make one wonder. Is he proving his masculinity at the expense of Asian peasants? Is he showing what a macho he can be by unleashing the ugliest barroom instincts in Agnew, Mitchell, National Guardsmen, and the American populace? We should know, because we simply can't afford 2.5 years of a president who might have those problems. We don't need therapeutic foreign policies. Not with our sons, he can't. Not with our brothers. There are several conventional political courses which can still be followed before we end up in a state of domestic barbarism. The Senate can take the money away from the executive branch by repealing the Tonkin Gulf resolution and by demolishing the defense budget. That won't do at all. But it might bring Nixon his senses. If it does not, then there is one further course. Nixon can be impeached. I realize that this might leave us with Agnew. Well, then do it again to Agnew. The Congress kept Carswell out of the Supreme Court after first keeping out Clement Haynsworth. Why not make the same kind of parlay out of Nixon and Agnew? There is no way this country can live when it has two neuters commanding power, devoid of true compassion or true ideas, dedicated to the eradication of opposition, domestic and foreign. This country was the creation of brave men. In the past few years, we have seen our soldiers machine gun girls and babies and old women. Some of us were insulated from that by distance, or because the dead were Asians. Now the dead are Americans. At Kent State, two boys and two girls were shot to death by men unleashed by a president's slovenly rhetoric. If that's the brave new America, to hell with it.
All right. The ominous bass plucking of jazz legend Ron Carter, the sounds of jazz flautist James Spalding, and the narration of American-born but swinging London mod DJ Roscoe, narrating the commentaries of political and music writer Nat Hentoff. And if you're a record collector, you know Nat Hentoff's name from the back of hundreds of vinyl LP liner notes, mostly jazz records, but also blues, also rock. That is off a very interesting Polydor LP titled Murder at Kent State University. And each track is a different essay written by Nat Hentoff, which would have originally appeared in the New York Post way back when it was still a respectable newspaper and not a tabloid. Before that, we heard some more comedy from the great Dick Davey, the first white stand-up comedian to ever perform at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and he was quite successful as well. Before that, we heard The Sound of Dissent, another very interesting record from this period in history about the unrest in the late 60s in the United States. And The Sound of Dissent was on the Mercury Records label, and it consisted of improvised music by some guy named Dan Armstrong, played to the sounds of the audio news clips of the late 60s. So this album was conceived by a man named Jack McMahon, and I don't know much about it, but it's very good, and we'll listen to some more of it in a bit. Before that, we heard a track by The Brothers-in-Law and their song about the reactionary and generally racist anti-Native Canadian organization, the RCMP. And now this song is about the RCMP's red hunt that went on for several decades, weeding out and arresting progressives in universities and elsewhere in a very McCarthy-esque manner. But this continued for years after McCarthy was long gone in the United States. The RCMP was doing this in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, strike-breaking, spying on unions, this kind of thing. And progressives are still targeted today, not as much by the RCMP, and more so every day by CSIS, which is Canada's version of the CIA, and they have been responsible for kidnapping anti-globalization protesters, helping with the overthrow of the democratically elected left-wing governments in Haiti, and the continued occupation of that country. Actually, the RCMP is in Haiti right now. If you were to stroll around Port-au-Prince, you would see armed white men in RCMP uniforms generally offering protection to the ruling classes. So there you go. Anyways, this song was about the RCMP, and it appeared on a very, very high-selling record in Canada called Oh Oh Canada by the Brothers-in-Law. And they were a extremely high-selling satirical folk quartet in Canada throughout the 1960s. I don't know why they were so popular. They're all right. This track was okay, but for the most part, they weren't as good as the track we heard. And you can find their LPs in every single thrift store in Canada. They are incredibly common to find. Irony of ironies, they call themselves the Brothers-in-Law as a pun because they were all police officers near Windsor, Ontario, just north of Detroit. They were actually police officers, and here they are making fun of the RCMP. Before that, we heard more from Dick Davey, and the tracks we're listening to from him today are off an LP called Stronger Than Dirt, which was his second LP on Columbia. His very first record was recorded live at the Apollo and was titled You're a Long Way From Home, Whitey. And we started off this set with the satirical rock and roll group The Fugs and their track Kill for Peace from 1966 off their second LP, which I believe was just called The Fugs. And The Fugs were headed by poet Ed Sanders. They performed regularly at anti-war protests in the 1960s. Well, let's backtrack a little now. We've been listening to stuff from the late 60s and the Cold War atmosphere then, Richard Nixon, the Vietnam War. Let's listen to some clips from the earlier part of the Cold War.
First of all, sir, what is your principal criticism of the way that we have conducted our war in Korea?
It's my opinion that we should fight the war to win in Korea, rather than try to settle it at the diplomatic table, which is impossible when you're dealing with Russia.
Well, Mr. Van Zandt, would you extend your will to win so far as to include the atomic bomb?
Very definitely, Dr. Peterson. I've always been a firm believer that we should use the atomic bomb, not only on Korea, but north of the Yalu River in Manchuria. I think that there are several targets in northern Korea we could use. That is, we could destroy them with the atomic bomb. We could destroy them and contaminate them.
There will soon be an end to this cold and wicked war. between those hard-headed communists get what they're looking for. Only one thing that will stop them, and they're a ferocious fun. If General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb. Now over in Korea, our boys have fought and fell, but they died just like heroes amid a minute shot and shell. They had their hands tied behind them and were murdered by the score, by those dirty-minded communists who started this sad war. They'll be fired just in the middle by an old round, and the radioactivity will burn them to the ground. If there's any commies left, they'll be all on the run. If General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb. Atomic bomb. Just what they deserve. They'll be fire, dust, and metal flying all around, and radioactivity will burn their playhouse down. If there's any commies left, they'll be all on the run. If General MacArthur drops a atomic bomb.
If you ever were like a little outspoken, you know, he's stepping on this. You know, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't bother. That was like the blacklist concept. That was a beautiful thing, like communism. You're not getting anything to eat because of that. That was the last vicious thing you did, and you'll rot in there. And there's so many necks to kiss, but you're not getting it. Yeah. Communism, okay. I don't think communism because, well, first I'll tell you why capitalism is the best. It's free enterprise, right? Barter. Gimbals, if I could really rank with a clerk, well, I don't like this, and how I can resolve it if it really gets ridiculous, I go, frigate, man, I walk. What can this guy do at Gimbals? Even if I was the president of Gimbals, he can always reject me from that store, but I can always go to Macy's. He can't really hurt me. And communism is like one big phone company. Government control, man. And if I get two rank with that phone company, where can I go, man? I'll end up like a schmuck with a Dixie cup and a thread. Hello, 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 hello. That's all I've had it. That's why your capitalist system is the best system, man. Man, grooves it. But I'm not gonna buy any time for Radio Free Europe. Freak that, what are you? Hey, disc jockey, and that was the coasters on the flip side of two up and two back in the Hully Gully. And how bad do you hate communism? Why don't you lay some bread on us and Radio Free Europe? What? Because I have nothing to tell Europe, man, at all. All I can tell Europe is that this is my country, and I dig it, it's good to me, and there's no right or wrong. I don't care. That's mine, that's all. I'm not going to moralize with you. Communism cooks for you solid, man. But I'm not going to try to free anybody. Not when the governor of Georgia closed the schools. No, I can't. I can't tell him. What is that? It's dopey talker. I can't. Okay.
Agnes. Oh, Agnes. Oh, how I love you, Agnes. Oh, Agnes. Oh, how you made me blue. 'Cause today I was informed by the FBI. You're Russian spy. Agnes, oh Agnes, just what have you done? Agnes, my Agnes, for the Soviet Union. If only you were booked for belting some guy instead of for being a teenage Russian spy. I thought that you really cared the night that we first kissed, but now I know you were just playing with me, 'cause I was the son of an atomic scientist. Agnes, oh Agnes, life's more than I can bear, 'cause Agnes, my Agnes, they're giving you the chair. But even though you are a teenage Russian spy, Agnes, my Agnes, I love you till you die. I can't help myself, Agnes, I love you till you die, Agnes. Wave bye-bye, Agnes. More power to you, Agnes.
I must not conceal from you tonight the truth as I see it. It is certain that Europe would have been communized some time ago, but for the deterrent of the atomic bomb in the hands of the United States.
President Truman has just announced that Soviet Russia has the atomic bomb. The announcement was made with dramatic suddenness a few minutes ago in Washington in a White House statement issued to reporters.
Everybody's worried about the atomic bomb, but nobody's worried about the day my Lord will come. When he'll hit great God Almighty like an atom bomb. When he comes, when he comes.
In 1945, the atom bomb became alive. In 1949, the USA got very wise. They found a country across the line had an atom bomb of the very same kind. The people got worried all over the land, just like folks got in Japan. So I say,
everybody's worried,
yeah,
about the atomic bomb, but nobody's worried,
no,
about the day my Lord will come, when he'll hit
great God Almighty like an atom bomb,
when he comes,
good Lord,
when he comes. Everybody's worried about the atomic bomb, but nobody's worried about the day my Lord will come, when he'll hit
great God Almighty like an atom bomb,
when he comes, when he comes.
But God told Elijah he would send down fire from on high. He told the brother Noah by the rainbow sign, there'll be no water but fire in the sky. Now don't get worried, just bear in mind, seek King Jesus and you shall find peace, happiness, and joy divine with my Jesus in your mind. So I say,
everybody's worried,
yeah,
about the atomic bomb, but nobody's worried,
no,
about the day my Lord will come, when he'll hit
great God Almighty like an atom bomb,
when he comes,
great God,
when he comes. Everybody's worried about the atomic bomb, but nobody's worried about the day my Lord will come, when he'll hit
great God Almighty
like an atom bomb, when he comes, when he comes.
That's Lowell Blanchard with the Valley Trio, their song When Jesus Hits Like an Atom Bomb, and Winston Churchill's famous statement about communism preceding it. Both of those clips are off the soundtrack to the excellent 1982 documentary The Atomic Cafe, directed by Kevin Rafferty, who, trivia note, might seem strange, did this excellent documentary about Cold War propaganda, is actually a cousin of George W. Bush, but apparently could not be more diametrically opposed in terms of politics, sort of like Dick Cheney and his gay daughter, or Karl Rove and his gay father. Before that, we heard Agnes, Teenage Russian Spy. That's off one of my favorite comedy records without question, Mad Magazine Twists Rock and Roll from 1960 on Big Top Records. And it was a guy named Mike Russo who was doing the singing, backed up by the Delwoods, performing on that swell Cold War novelty tune. Before that, we heard Lenny Bruce's take on communism off his album Live from Carnegie Hall. And we started off the set with When They Drop the Atomic Bomb, a song about what those hard-headed communists will get what's coming to them, according to Jackie Doll and his Pickled Peppers. Some swell bluegrass there. And he was preceded by a terrifying proclamation from a Republican senator from Pennsylvania in the early 50s, a guy named James E. Van Zandt, who, according to that clip, thought it might be a very good idea to cover the entire population of Korea with radioactivity. We've got plenty more Cold War relics coming up. Comedy from Mort Saul, Dick Gregory, satire from the legendary That Was the Week That Was television show. And now, every record collector's favorite reactionary libertarian, the humorless old coot himself, Victor Lundberg.
This is a work I received from an ex-Marine in Phoenix, Arizona. I died for you today, my friends, in the slime of Vietnam. And if you're concerned, to say the least, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the soldier and the sailor. I'm the airman and marine. I'm the lifeblood of your nation. You have sent me to this scene. I'm the one who loads the Amtraks. I'm the pilot just as well. I'm the dedicated corpsman saving leathernecks who fell. I'm the trooper of the airborne. I'm the CB with a trade. I'm the tireless army medic, dodging steel to give first aid. I'm the gunner in the choppers. I'm the crew chief in the crew. I'm the cannoneer and mortar man in the field defending you. I'm the men of different races clinging to a rumbling tank. I'm Catholic, Jew, and Protestant, and I serve in every rank. Call me Cohen, Smith, or Kelly, or pronounce my foreign name. And regardless of my color, when I'm hurt, I bleed the same. I'm Indian and Mexican. I'm Polish, Dutch, and Greek. But I'm every inch American, and your freedom's what I seek. I came from every walk of life, from mansions to the slums. I've seen the bell of liberty, and I've heard the fife and drums. I'm the rancher and the miner. I'm the farmer from the plain. I've lived by God through dust and drought, and I've prayed aloud for rain. I've known hardship and depression, still I've seen our country grow. When Uncle Sam came calling, I was proud that I could go. Now I've watched those demonstrations and the marchers who protest, and I said, thank God for freedom. Why, my country is still the best. So take your banners and your slogans, raise your placards to the sky, and I'll defend your right to do it, though in doing so, I'll die. I'm your father's sons and brothers. I'm the arm of Uncle Sam. And I died today for you, my friends, in the slime of Vietnam.
I don't want anything with controversy in it, right? No names of ethnic groups, religious groups, or the word gas and other chemical elements, right? Interesting, huh? They're cracking up. Anyway, so then we got the film on, and then the Academy, they didn't get to do a lot of the things that they wanted to do at the Academy and give out several awards, one of which I mentioned before was, there were a lot they couldn't give out, one of which was for the most blacklisted actor who became a writer. They didn't get to give that out. And Hedda Hopper intimated in her column, she pointed out that I'm going to speak at the Truman Dinner, May 8th in Chicago, his 75th birthday, and she said, I finally found my niche working with Truman, who attacked the Un-American Activities Committee at a rally at UCLA. So that's part of his background. He speaks at these communist rallies. So before that, he worked in Washington for a long time. You know, this reminds me of something, by the way, which is not altogether material, but it reminds me, you know, Henry Luce. Henry Luce attacked me after the Academy, too. There was a big editorial in Life magazine against what I said about MacArthur, and he referred to me in there, although he has a tendency to use pronouns, and that was me, you know, when he said, remember what he says there? He says, he used bad taste in referring to General MacArthur. Well, when you see he, and it's in lowercase, he's referring to me, the other one. Thank you. 5 years ago, they had a plebiscite in Greece, and they were going to either have a communist government or the royalist government, the king and queen. So the State Department said, we'll take a plebiscite. So they had this vote, and it came out 93% communistic. So then the State Department recommended to the president that they install a king anyway. So then the president said at that time, what about the 93% communists? And the State Department said, yes, it's a shame that so many people could be misled. Right? That's the way they think. So, now the president said that the one thing that the Russians are terrified of in case of war is the Turkish cavalry. There's an article about that here. Right? That good to know? So, you know, just in case they won't listen to reason, we always have that. You know? So the question is, don't the Russians have any cavalry? Yes, are they available? No, where are they? They're touring for Mr. Hurok and Obama. Thank you. Now, what are we talking about? Does anybody know? So, Richard Nixon's trip to Russia. He's going to Russia. And he said he hopes he gets along with them. And so, actually, you know, if he doesn't get along with them, he'll kind of be in trouble because, you know, he can't call anybody a communist and hurt their career over there. Isn't that the end? Thank you. Now, all right.
Well, one reason why I'm down here because, I believe in backing our boys in Vietnam. I believe in our president, and also that I'm an ex-veteran myself, and I have a boy in Korea right now, now at this day, and he's been over there for the last year. The least I can do is not only to support my own country, to support my own son who's overseas himself.
I feel that the war should end. I have a son who is the draft age.
My sign on one side reads, let's win in Vietnam, and on the other side says, thank you, draft dodges and peace sticks, and it's signed by Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Cong.
What is that flag you're carrying?
National Liberation Front, because I feel we don't belong in South Vietnam, and they represent South Vietnamese people. That's why.
I see that you're carrying an American flag. How do you feel about those who are displaying the flag of the Viet Cong?
Well, this is my flag. That may be their flag, but this is my flag, and I love it. So I carry it, and I wave it. Somebody tried to take it away from me, and I'd fight them to take it away from me.
We just took it upon ourselves to come down here and protest this, what I call, disgusting demonstration put on by these people. They call themselves Americans, they're willing to support our boys in Vietnam. I think that's really disgusting.
Why are you here?
Because I implacably opposed to this war. I feel that we have no business there. That the only reason we're there is because we were afraid to let them have an election, because we knew that the leftist element there would win. And that's how the whole thing started.
And if I were the president, I'd try to put every person in the country who advocates communist victory in a jail. And I try to indict every college student raising money and blood and flying the Viet Cong flag. They know better than that.
There it goes, Chicago, that wonderful town. Wonderful town of political conventions and anti-war demonstrations.
The policemen with motorcycles are riding up on the sidewalk trying to run people over to clear them out.
I came here to talk to you about the man.
One cop picked up a demonstrator and tossed him into the down the steps of the subway.
Who has been for 20 years right up to the present time.
Yeah. There goes the gas. Oh.
The articulate exponent of the aspirations of the human heart for the young, for the old, and for those of us in between.
They're charging into it. Press. They're just swinging into this crowd.
A leader of experience who has exemplified his ability to preserve the very best that we have in our past while he accommodates what we have in the present to the demands of our future.
A stampede of policemen as they push the crowd down. One person falls on top of another, and then another, and then another. And they can't get out of it. The people in the back are being beaten. I can hear the crack on the head, and they're falling.
We're going to have to meet the challenges of the unfinished business of democracy, which is always to preserve for all of the people, young, old, and in between, those great values of democracy, which are freedom, justice, and peace.
You can hear the motorcycle as they try to run people down.
These have always been the great values of America.
Wisconsin!
Mr. Chairman, most delegates to this convention do not know that thousands of young people are being beaten in the streets of Chicago.
Gas masks, quick, they're yelling.
And for that reason,
they're taking off their helmets, putting on their gas masks.
For 2 weeks,
that is to say, their torn shirts and their handkerchiefs around their mouths. I can see them shooting gas through the flamethrower.
The demonstration here is a loyalty to our government, and we're very happy with the turnout.
Are your men here today, some of your folks?
Oh, yeah, quite a few of them are here. Today we have a regular post from the waterfront, the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 7095. They have attended these demonstrations for 21 years.
Now, there are a couple of other parades going on in town today. What are your feelings about the anti-Vietnam parades?
Well, I can't speak for them, fellas. Let them speak for themselves.
Down in Washington Square today that wanted to form a feeder march to come up here to the Sheep Meadow, and there was a police riot down in Washington Square. The minute these people walked out of the park on the sidewalk, the police set on them and attacked them.
It's perfectly all right, it seems, for a peace demonstrator to call a cop a murderer, a fink, a rat, or anything like that, and the cop's got to shut up. Or he'll have civil rights groups right down his neck.
The
demonstration was very peaceful until the policemen started, I believe, as a deliberate tactic, using their clubs. And if they do start using their clubs like that, it does scare people. That blood scares people. And it's much easier to disperse the crowd that way.
Never have I seen anything like it. In all the years, I'm going to be 83 years old. I've been a newspaper man for nearly 70 years without breaking continuity. I have never seen anything like we've got today. The only thing is not to worry too much about it either. After all, when you see one terrible-looking object walking down the street with a girl, you know, a hippie, watch the next 100,000 people. They look like normal human beings. The proportion is still there. Don't worry about that.
This is a New York City cab driver. Now, aside from the fact that you're being held up in traffic, you're waiting for the marchers, how do you feel about this?
I feel about it. I say that we should take every bomb and throw it in at the Chinamen and get rid of them.
Then I take it you're not in sympathy with the marchers.
I'm not in sympathy with the marcher. I'm for the United States, first, last, and always.
We have another New York City cab driver. How do you feel about the demonstration today?
Well, the only thing I can feel about it, I can't get through. I can make a living out of it. And look, I can't move around.
Well, Tom, I just read in the newspapers this week where President Johnson has now asked the Congress to pass a series of taxes to discourage people from traveling abroad.
Well, I read that too, but I don't think that he has to go that far.
I don't know, Tommy. It's a very difficult situation. You know, people keep spending our money abroad, and it's hurting our economy. People keep wanting to travel to other countries instead of staying in the good old United States.
Yeah, well, the way I think is, President Johnson should just come up with something positive as an inducement to keep the people here. If President Johnson came up with a positive thing to keep the people here.
What could the president do to make the people want to stay in this country?
Well, he could quit.
Wait a minute. This week, American buildings were under attack around the globe. Today, for example, mobs of angry demonstrators attacked the American Library in Surabaya, or Surabaya. In recent weeks, American embassies have been stoned and burned in Cairo, Prague, Nairobi, and Jakarta. Yet despite all this vilification, not one word of complaint has been heard from the ambassadors on the scene. We wonder if the press hasn't been exaggerating these anti-American outbursts, or are the diplomats just being diplomatic?
Here in the American embassy, we're helping the natives out through famine and drought. We're courting them, supporting them, we're giving them food, and they love us now beyond any country grow, though progress is slow. But every day we find a way to win a few friends. There's a spark of love beginning to glow. Get the rickshaw ready, Ralph, they burned the limousine. But isn't it nice to know they've used American gasoline? Yes, our foreign policy.
Yesterday, commenting in his syndicated column on the lack of a definite policy in Vietnam, Joseph Alsop estimated that the chances of the United States coming up at this point with a policy that will lead quickly to peace are only a little better than even money, about 7-5 in our favor. We wonder if they'd agree with that estimate in Las Vegas.
Hello, Benny the bookie, best odds in Vegas. You want to know the odds on the North Vietnamese overrunning Saigon by closing day at Hialeah? Well, we're quoting 9-5. Okay, Charlie, you're down for 500 skins on the Viet Cong. All right, good enough. Hello, Benny the bookie. Chinese intervention on the ground, 4-1, right. All right, you got 2,000 and a 600 mil Chinese. Yeah, I got you down here. No, yeah. Hello, Benny the bookie. What's that? Chinese air support for North Vietnam? North Vietnam? That's even odds. Pick 'em. Oh, sorry, pal. That's the best I can do. Well, everything's a gamble these days. Ask Maxwell Taylor. Sure. Well, here's... No, I can't. Hello, Benny the Bookie. The present South Vietnamese government lasting until the All-Star game? That's 99 to 1 against. Now, hold your 10 grand. We're not taking any bets on that. No. No, I gotta go. I took a team bet, yeah. Hello, Benny the Boogie. War with Russia? 9-1. War with Peking Reds? 7-1. Use of atomic weapons? Us or them? Us 12-1. Them 6-1. Okay, you got it. World War III across the board. Yeah.
We got the bomb and that was good, cause we love peace and motherhood. Then Russia got the bomb, but that's okay, cause the balance of power's maintained that way. Who's next? France got the bomb, but don't you grieve, cause they're on our side, I believe. China got the bomb, but have no fears, they can't wipe us out for at least 5 years. Who's next? Now Indonesia claims that they are gonna get one any day. South Africa wants two, that's right. One for the black and one for the white. Who's next? Egypt's gonna get one too, just to use on you know who. So Israel's getting tense, wants one in self-defense. The Lord's our shepherd, says the psalm. Better get a bomb. Who's next? Luxembourg is next to go, and who knows, maybe Monaco will try to stay serene and calm when Alabama gets the bomb. Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? And if someone sets it off on some pretext and the human race is gone, I wonder who's next? Next.
Hooray for the choice of the nation, our chieftain so brave and so true. We'll go to the Great Reformation for Johnson and liberty too. We'll go for the son of old Texas, the hero of the Lone Star's good crew. The pride of a nation held fast for Johnson and liberty too. They'll find that by fighting and mauling, their falsehoods will not become true. For people are everywhere calling for Johnson and liberty too. Then up with the banner so glorious, the star-spangled red, white, and blue. We'll fight till our banner's victorious for Johnson and liberty too. Our David's good sling is unerring, the stalking red giant he slew. Then aimed for the freedoms of mankind, for Johnson and liberty too. We'll go for the son of old Texas, the hero of the Lone Star's good crew. The pride of a nation held fast, for Johnson and liberty too. Yes, for Johnson and liberty too.
See, I wish you'd read all the papers. You know, you've been reading these local papers, you know, calling me the Negro Mark Saul. You have to read in Congo papers and see what they're calling Mark Saul, the white Dick Gregory. You know?
Thank you.
Since I've been on the Jack Parr show, everybody's been asking me, what is Jack Parr really like? I'm trying to find out who I am. Yeah, they can call me Bob Newhart, Shelley Berman, Mark Saul, and a couple of, I'm so confused, me and three white boys and myself, I don't know what to do. Well, the way things go in 10 years from now, you have to be my color to get a job. I'd like to thank you very wonderful people in the audience who have talked about my act and come back and bring your friends with you. And through doing this, you push me right up into the eyes of the Internal Revenue.
And that was the great Dick Gregory off his record In Living Black and White. And Dick Gregory does not perform that often anymore. In fact, he gave up stand-up altogether towards the end of the 60s, early 70s, to become a full-time activist. He was very, very much involved in the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and went on to have his own line of organic health juices. But that is Dick Gregory, who actually recently just performed in Washington State with Mort Saul on the same bill. Before that, we heard a horrible song called LBJ and Liberty, a country track off a budget LP on the Design Records label, the record titled Ballad of the Green Berets. Of course, that's a cover version of the song by Sergeant Barry Sadler. Before that, we heard cuts from That Was the Week That Was, a best of LP of audio highlights from the 1960s TV show. This LP was released in 1981 on Radiola Records, which was mostly a nostalgia label. I believe that was the voice of Nancy Ames singing a pretty funny song about America and its government spin. Yes, they're shooting at us and burning our embassies, but that's because they love us, that kind of a thing, greeting us as liberators, as it were. And there's the line at the end of the song, "Don't believe all the papers, things are swell." And That Was the Week That Was is not rerun really ever, but it was a real smart show with an amazing cast of contributors. Harry Morgan, Buck Henry, Woody Allen, Steve Allen, Alan Sherman, Tom Lehrer, just to name some of the people involved with that show. Before that, we heard a quick joke from the Smothers Brothers about LBJ off the original television soundtrack to the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. Before that, another cut from the fascinating relic Mercury Records LP, The Sound of Dissent. We listened to the sounds of some Vietnam protests, both for and against the war, and the sounds of the 1968 Democratic National Convention police riots in Chicago, which, of course, was so vividly captured in one of the best films of the 1960s, Haskell Wexler's Medium Cool. Before that, we heard Mort Saul talking about Nixon, Russia, and Cold War-related topics from his Fine Verve LP, A Way of Life. And we started off this set with Victor Lundberg, president of the Libertarian Party in the late 1960s, and a real crotchety old asshole. And the track we heard, In the Slime of Vietnam, from his notorious LP on Liberty Records, An Open Letter, Victor Lundberg. My favorite line in that track has to be, Lundberg says, "Call me Cohen Smith or Kelly, or pronounce my foreign name." That just about wraps it up for this edition of Laugh Tracks and the Generation Exploitation Podcast. My name is Cliff Nesteroff, and I think I'll leave you today with some cuts about another hot topic in the late 60s, less to do with politics, more to do with kids and fun. Speaking about LSD, and we're going to listen to a record that Capitol put out in 1968 called LSD. Some interesting music and a very conservative narrator, and also a little bit of Richard Pryor in there. And then the second half of tonight's show is all about radio. Talk to you momentarily.
What you're listening to are musicians performing psychedelic music under the influence of a mind-altering chemical called LSD. What you're hearing now is the hysterical laughter of a young man shaken by a wild hallucination midway through an LSD trip.
Oh. I'm so happy right where I am right now. Right where I am, I'm so happy.
Millions of Americans will illegally consume lysergic acid diethylamide, commonly known as LSD, during the next 12 months. Such indiscriminate use of LSD, once solely intended for scientific research, has snowballed into a nationwide crisis. Teenagers prowl along the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles, high on the drug. Some of them chew the bark off trees and growl like dogs. They alternately writhe on the floor, screaming, cower in a corner, or dreamily prop themselves against the walls. 10,000 thrill seekers attend a 3-day LSD festival in San Francisco, undulating to atonal music while experiencing way-out trances. LSD pushers openly sell the drug on dozens of college campuses. Adherents include corporation presidents, noted educators, a magazine publisher. But it's mostly unsupervised teenagers, the rebellious adolescents searching for identity, who embrace LSD and sound its praises.
I took some acid once too. White dude gave me some. At a party, dude said, "This is far out." I said, "Well, what is the shit?" "It's far fucking out." I said, "Well, give me the shit, motherfucker." "That ain't shit."
"It'll have you tripping."
"Hey, get the fuck out of my face. Trip that, motherfucker." You know, about 20 minutes later, I was at the party, you know. "Hey, blood, what's happening, home? Ain't nothing to tell you. You got it? Yeah." "Yeah. Huh? Oh, man, ain't nothing to it. White dude gave me some shit talking about I'm gonna be tripping." "You know, I ain't going no place without my luggage."
"I've got to get the fuck out of here."
LSD itself certainly is not fatal, but for individuals temporarily irrational in mind and spirit, it can be the propellant toward a swift demise. Accidents and suicides have been reported. High on the drug, an adolescent slashed his arm and bled to death in a field of lilies. Even homicidal tendencies can emerge. The fortunate, among those who become unhinged under LSD, at least manage to stay alive. For a 14-year-old truant, it was difficult enough defining one personality, her own.
I'm only 14 years.
She was asked when she took LSD for the first time.
Right before my 14th birthday.
The sexual element is discreetly downgraded among the pariahs of LSD in emporia like the psychedelic bookshop in San Francisco, which purveys LSD guidebooks, quarterlies, lecture courses, and atonal music while avoiding more prurient merchandise. One of the leading LSD spokesmen, however, is poet Allen Ginsberg, a heavily bearded remnant of the Beat Generation. When sufficiently stimulated during many of his public poetry readings, the sound is unforgettable. The blending of a sustained organ and finger cymbals form the unusual background for his mystical chants. The supporters and detractors of LSD currently are at loggerheads and will probably remain that way interminably. We've attempted to objectively display both points of view. On the basis of the evidence, however, the answer to the LSD problem should be just about as obvious as the basic question: is this trip really necessary?